you only discover it almost as a byproduct of what you're doing. I think that's the key. Hello, everybody. This is Art Juice. This is honest, generous, and humorous conversations that will feed your creative soul and get you thinking with me, Alice Sheridan.
And me, Louise Fletcher.
This is episode 55, and I was listening to an earlier episode back earlier in this week. I quite liked our previous intro, but it occurred to me that we've probably got a lot of new listeners recently, and they might not know who Alice Sheridan or Louise Fletcher are. Should we say a quick hello?
I mean, thought everyone in the world knew who we were.
I mean, we say that each week because we assume that you've come here from either one of our social media accounts or you know us already. But we know that so many of you are recommending us and referring us. And, you know, it's lovely to see the new listeners. But you're probably kind of going, who the heck are these two people? So would you like to start? Who are you, Louise?
Who am I? Oh, that's a very deep question, isn't it? How deep are we going? Well, I'm Louise. I live in Yorkshire. I paint semi-abstract landscapes. I've been painting for about 5 or 6 years seriously and full-time for the last year and a half. And I met you online, and then we got to know each other. And about a year ago, we had this idea to do this together. So I don't know. I live with my husband. I don't have any children. I have a dog called Riley and a cat called Bob. Bob's a girl, not a boy, but that's a long story. And that's me, really.
We obviously have something about cross-sex change pets then, because we have a dog called Indy after Indiana Jones, even though she's a girl. So we... both got confused pets in common. Okay. I'm Alice. I live in London. So much as you guys might like to think of us sitting, having a cup of tea over a kitchen table and having these chats, we don't. We do it all online. We have met in real life. I am married. I've got two children who are now 18 and 15. But when I first started painting, they were little teenies. And I started doing this seriously when I got my full days back, when the youngest one started school. So about 10 years ago now, 11 years ago now, I had my first open studio. I never felt brave enough to approach galleries. I didn't feel that I was ready, ever. So the only option open to me was just start doing it myself. And that's all I've done. I've just kept putting one foot in front of the other. And it has gone from a hobby I loved to something that I wanted to take more seriously, because I was totally avoiding going back to work, working in an office as a designer. Had no desire to do that whatsoever. So I have just been kind of growing this gradually, and trying to keep my sense of humor along the way. So anyway, sorry, sprung that one on you, but I thought it was a nice time to say hello and who are we?
I think that's actually one thing that's really we have in common. We have a lot of things that we're different in, but we have in common this sense of just figuring out a way to make things happen and figuring out our own way of doing this. And we've, you know, both found other people to help with that along the way, and you were one of the people who helped me along the way. But just that sense of it never occurred to me to think, okay, what's the established way to do this, and then go and try and do that. Perhaps like you, because I didn't think I was good enough to do that, or I didn't feel confident enough to do that, or perhaps just because that's not me. But just, I think that's why I enjoy talking to you about all this stuff, because we have that same approach of just, let's just do something and see if it works. And then if that doesn't work, let's do something else and see if that works.
Yeah. Do you think that's because we're particularly tenacious? Tenacious is a nicer word than stubborn, isn't it?
Yeah. Yes. Determined and tenacious. Okay. And independent minded is a better word than bolshy. The same thing, it means the same thing.
I just find it all interesting. I think that's the thing. I like the perpetual challenge of it. It keeps me I was going to say it keeps me awake, but that sounds like it keeps me awake at night. That's not what I mean at all. I mean, it keeps my mind active. It keeps me thinking. It keeps me kind of challenging and looking for new things. So that's the part about it that I like, that it's not just me and the paintings. It's all the other parts wrapped in together. So, okay, there we are. Nice to meet you all. So what have you been working on this week?
Well, it's been a bit of a mixed bag, speaking of things being all wrapped together. Some partly marketing, partly admin, some accounting, which is a nightmare. But I have had some painting time, and tomorrow is going to be a painting day. And on my big painting day was yesterday. And if you remember a couple of weeks ago on the podcast when we had Nicholas Wilton here, he made a throwaway comment about, wouldn't it be great if we just painted with neon paints? And I have this tube of orange, which I accidentally bought, meaning to buy cadmium orange, but either I bought the wrong thing or they sent the wrong thing, and I got fluorescent orange, which was not really what I had in mind. And I also have a bright yellow and a really garish pink. So I thought, it was a combination of him saying that about neon colours and you saying the other week that you like to start with really unusual colours, and I thought, what if I just then take it to the extreme and I start the next few, I want to make some smaller paintings, I've got a lot of big ones, what if I start them all in the most garish neon that I could, or colours that I have, and then go from there. So I had really good fun plastering on all these horrible colours that clash together. Funny thing that happened, I had the roofer here and he was using my art studio as a bathroom. And I wasn't in there, but he cut his finger and he went over there to wash his hand in the sink. And apparently he said to my builder, what, is she just cleaning her brushes on these ones then? Because lying around on the floor was like this just pile of garish neon nightmare stuff. But anyway, what was inspiring and great about it was that when they dried, the first layers dried, and I came back to them in the afternoon, and I'm painting these ones in more Alice colours, actually, more greens and blues, because I want a contrast to what I've been doing. The little bits of neon orange and the pit where it had blended with the pink, in a couple of areas it's come through, not in a scratched in way, but in a thin bit showing through way.
Yeah.
That is really lovely. And actually it's a bit, and now I don't want to lose those bits, so I don't know what I'm going to do. But it's just a reminder to me again that I love working with a limited palette, and these will be limited palette as well. But I think starting with absolutely garish, hideous colours gives you this surprise that you would never get. Even if I work in a limited palette and then choose a surprise colour, it's never going to be as much of a surprise as something that I just really don't like.
No, and it can bring an interesting unity as well. I mean, it's much in the same way that traditionally oil paintings might have been started, in a kind of with a warm color ground and then painting with cooler colors on top. You know, there's a degree of balancing it out, and I think you can get a lovely glow from those bright colors. What you have to be careful about with neons is sometimes there's a degree of bleed through that can happen.
Mm-hmm.
So watch out for that one. But you're working on paper?
No, these are on boards.
Okay.
These are on small boards. Yeah, so we'll have to see. I've put them to one side because I love a couple of them so much that I thought it's time to just put them away for a bit and then come back later and see if they need any more doing.
Yeah, I've certainly had that with using really bright colour oil pastel and then going on top of it with acrylic. You get kind of, the colour is so strong, it can kind of soak through the paint.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a little bit tricky. But I think anything that starts you off differently like that, didn't it feel different to paint fun that way?
It's good fun.
Yeah.
And luckily I don't care what the roofer thinks, so it doesn't matter. I don't think he's ever likely to be one of my collectors. So,
and the way you said it, he came over to your studio to go to the look, it sounded like he was peeing in the corner like a fan.
No, there is actually, I should have said that. Yes, there is a small bathroom in the room that is currently my studio. So, yes, he did.
Oh, classic.
So, how has your week been?
I can't believe it's recording day again already. It feels like we only did it yesterday. And part of that was because we were away at the weekend celebrating 21 years of surviving marriage. So normally we're like the least romantic couple ever, but I thought, no, we're going to go away and do something. Anyway, there was something that I just wanted to tell you about. So one of the places we came back at the end of a day out, and there was this, we were in Wiltshire, beautiful small town that we were staying in, and there was a sign up, so this old building, and it said 17th century schoolhouse and almshouse open, big sign on the gate saying open. And I said, well, let's pop in there before we go back. And so we walked in, and on the right hand side there was this old schoolroom with some really interesting they're called box pews either side of the pulpit, and I'd never seen that before. Nobody there, no signs. So we have a little look around, come back into the central hallway, and this little voice from another desk says, hello, can I help you? And I said, oh yeah, do you know anything more about the box pews? And she just looks at me completely blankly, and I said yeah. And she said, well, what, almost like, what are you doing here? And I said, I thought we could just come in. And she said, well, yes, but you have to pay. And we said, okay, that's fine, we'll pay, but we didn't see any signs or anything, and you just said, can I help? And I thought it was, you know, would you like any help with any of the questions or anything that you're seeing? So anyway, we paid the money. She didn't know anything about box pews. And then we said, okay, so is there anything, what else to look at? And she said, well, you can look at it everywhere you like, upstairs and along. So upstairs, there was one room with a few scrapbooks on the table. And outside, there was along, which was, I thought, was the almshouses. So we were just having a walk along this path. And the old guy came out, and he started waving at us like, come back. And I'm coming back, I'm thinking, what have I done wrong now? He's like, you can't go down there. And I'm like, well, I thought we'd come to see the almshouses. And he said, no, everybody's living in them still. And I thought to myself, what have we paid to see them?
How much was it for this magical experience?
Not a huge amount. I mean, it was £8. But the point
is... £8? £8? You can't even go anywhere.
What was so funny about it was, it just made me think afterwards, and we did our best not to get the giggles, because it was like, could you have been any more unwelcoming? And I thought, for us, I'm so often asked, like, should I put the prices of my paintings on my website? And I just thought that this was just the most perfect example. They had a sign up that said, open, welcome, you know, not welcome, but open, as in come in. And yeah. Then somebody came in, and for all I know, we might have been the first people visiting that afternoon, and they were like making it as difficult as possible for us to see what we wanted to see. I mean, if you're going to open, have it open. Just let people know. It was astonishing.
It's so British. It's so British.
It was so funny. Anyway, alongside that, I've been thinking about how I can frame new work with a new framing style. So I've got to have a little trip to the framer tomorrow to try and investigate if we can have an affordable but different way to frame thin panels. Every so often I like to shake things up a little bit. So I'm investigating that. Can't report further than that because I haven't got very far with it yet. But
yeah,
we'll see how we go. New framing.
So that must mean you got some different pieces.
They're
some finished pieces.
Finished, almost finished.
Oh, exciting. So you've been working.
That's yeah, good. A little bit of working. Or perhaps it's the kind of thing where if I order the frames, then I know I've got to get them finished.
Oh, because you've got the art fair coming up.
Yes. I have, yeah, mid-March. So mid-March is Surrey Contemporary Art Fair. So getting work finished for that. And actually quite excited about it now. I feel like it's finally going to come together.
Thank good.
So today our main topic is inspired actually by a question that came from, so we have got a pop-up group, so there is a free Art to Life workshop coming up, and alongside it we have got a pop-up group. So if you want to join that workshop. You can sign up to it through our link, which is bit.ly/art2life with the number 2 2020, or you can find links to it on both our websites, so alicesheridan.com or louisefletcherart.com. And if you sign up for the workshop through those links, you're very welcome then to come and join our pop-up group. And the pop-up group is the Juiced Up Workshop Buddies group, and look for the big 2020 in the orange banner. So this evening in that group, we have got an extra, we're going to have a few extra things going on. So this evening we've got an extra live call, and we were asking for some questions, and we had this great one that came in from Lorraine Mills. Hi, Lorraine. And she says, I can draw well and I paint in watercolor and acrylics, but my style is all over the place. How can I find a style and settle on it? And Louise, you said that this is the most common question that comes up for what people ask you about. And we've spoken before a little bit about whether you feel that you have to have a style, but we've never really, I think, tackled this question of, okay, well, how do I find my style? So how do you see this come up in questions from people?
Yeah, very similar to Lorraine's question. People who are saying, I can do all sorts of things, I'm trying all sorts of things. Either it's beginners who are saying, I'm trying all sorts of things, how do I find my one thing? Or it's people who've been doing it for a long time, but they like lots of different things. So they might like printmaking and watercolor painting and acrylics and oils, and they go between them all and they can never decide. And I'm always a bit torn as to whether you even have to decide on a style. I don't think you decide on a style, first of all. I just think that you evolve a style through working and through choosing preferences.
Yeah.
I think that through working a lot, choosing your preferences, which requires understanding yourself. It requires really digging into what you like and what you care about. I think that's how you get to it. But I think what a lot of people think is that it's almost like they think they're going to pick a style. So I like Alice Sheridan's work, let's say. So I'm just going to pick that as my style. My style is going to be abstract landscapes in, you know, a lot of earthy colors. And
go on, how would you describe it? Come on then.
How would I describe your style? No, I can't. So I'm gonna be like Alice Sheridan. So it's gonna be very beautiful. It's gonna be mostly natural colors with surprise hints of unnatural colors, and there's gonna be a lot of line work in it, and there's gonna be almost a feeling of graphic elements, but in a way that's completely organic. That's how I would describe it. So then I decide, right, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to pick Alice.
So those
style.
Are the ingredients. So in that way of approaching it, you kind of work out what your ingredients are, and then you hope that you follow the recipe,
yeah,
mix it up,
and then it doesn't work.
The same way.
And then it doesn't work, because when you try it, it just doesn't work. I mean, I went through that. I went through this period years ago of I love that person. The person I particularly remember, somebody I've mentioned before on this podcast, she's from near me, an artist called Leslie Birch, and she paints, her work's changed a bit now actually, but at the time she painted semi-abstract landscapes which were very evocative of Scotland, where she's from, and the coast, and but very abstract, but still with a feeling of that. And they were scratchy and dramatic, and there was lots of texture. And I just thought, I want to do that. Problem with that is I'm not from the coast of Scotland, and I don't work in oil and cold wax, which is what she was working in at the time. And I'm not Leslie. So every time I tried to do that, it didn't work.
But does that matter if that's what gets you started? If that's the thing that kind of sparks your hunger for it and your energy for it and your enthusiasm to get going, I don't think that matters at all.
No.
I think if you use somebody else's work as a catalyst, I suppose, to get you off the starting blocks, I'm cool with that.
Yeah, I think
we all do that.
Yes, I think that's true.
There's something frustrating that can happen though, and I've certainly noticed it in my work, is I really love a lot of paintings of artists who paint in a very different way from me, and they have a very different, they have a very different feel that I know I wouldn't find satisfying to execute in that way. I think there's a real difference between what we see visually and the process which we like to create.
Yeah. Well, I remember when I finally went to a workshop with Leslie, and I remember one of the things she said to us is, you might not be the kind of artist that you want to be.
Yeah.
And I love that phrase. So yeah. That was exactly it for me. I am not the same kind of artist as Leslie. And as soon as I stopped trying to be, things got better.
Is that a disappointment though that you have to face? Or by then are you so far into your own thing that you don't even register it?
Yeah, well, in my case, I was happy to be finding my own thing. But I do think it can be a disappointment if you haven't found a way to get to your own thing. So it was disappointing for me when I tried to make paintings in a similar style, and they didn't look any good.
Yeah.
And partly they didn't look any good because I didn't understand how she was getting those effects. I could probably mimic it better now. But
and partly because you at that point were new to that way of trying to do things, and she'd been pulling it off and polishing it for 15 years.
Yeah. But even if I had pulled it off, obviously it would have been a bit disappointing, because deep down I would have known, that's not me.
Yeah.
And that was the situation that I had when I was at that stage. But I do agree with you that stage is essential. And I mean, I suppose there are people who don't go through that stage and who just magically find their own, you know, have their own, more tapped into their own way of doing it. But I think most of us do that. So you did that too.
Yeah, I've lost my thread. I did what too? Sorry, I was
so you. I was so boring. You just fell asleep. So I was asking if you also mimicked somebody else or tested out ideas from somebody else.
Oh, okay. I'm not sure if I did do the same thing. I have a scrapbook. Hang on, let me just grab it because it's here. I have a really old school scrapbook from, I think this almost goes back to post-university days. And when I look at what's in here, it's broad ideas that I was attracted to. So there's a lot of kind of line work and drawing. There's a lot of bold editing of simple shapes and texture, but it's very graphic based. But if I look back at this, I can see all the things that I like in my work. But I don't think there was ever a single painter who I saw that I set out to think, I'd like to paint like that. It was more just this gathering in of senses. And I think certainly for me at the beginning, there was too much of a big gap. The work that I saw that I was liking, I knew that there was no way that I could execute that to that level.
Mm-hmm.
I think I just kind of inherently knew that if I tried to do that, I would just fall flat, you know, and that would be a very painful way of learning. If I kind of set myself up for that, that would be a very difficult way of doing it. So I just started with what I had. I just started with what was around me. I started small. I liked a sense of just landscape, I think, gave me more freedom to play with the paint and experiment a bit more. So that was what I felt I needed to have a subject. So that's what I started with. But it wasn't about really replicating or copying from any other one artist. And it's developed from that point, really.
But I think your idea, the scrapbook idea, which you were doing at quite a young age then, is so important. And this is what I teach on my courses. I get people to have an art journal or a sketchbook going while we're working, and to cut out, well, you could use Pinterest as well, but old school style, to cut out things and put them in a scrapbook and say why you like them and really analyze what it is that you respond into, because that tells you some of your preferences. So with me and Leslie's work, instead of me saying, oh, I want to paint like that, I would now say, I want that same feeling of the wild weather outside. And I like the way she uses color and I like the textures, and then just mark that down as something I like.
I think the point is that about this is, I had no idea why I was doing it. Mm. I was just gathering this stuff because I liked it.
Mm-hmm.
There was no analysis. There was no me looking at it to try to understand it to help me. In fact, like I say, I think I just felt that this was so far ahead that it was impossible. It's only looking back at it now that I can say, well, I can see perfectly why I've put that photograph in that includes those colors.
Yeah. But that's what I mean. You were doing that without having that intention, but you were doing it. If someone hasn't evolved to naturally do that, I think it's a good exercise to do. So I think it's a good way, even if you do a Pinterest board. And I find it interesting to do a Pinterest board and just go through Pinterest randomly and take any picture you like look of, whether it's a photo of a person or whatever it is, just anything
just
that
like
appeals
it.
To you.
Yeah,
yeah,
you
I like that,
it.
I like that, I like that. And put it together and you come up with this amazing cohesive thing in the end.
And also the other thing about that is I've done it with branding a little bit too. What was I doing it for? Something, and it was more about a feel of branding, and one of the exercises was going through Pinterest, and again the first stage, it's almost like there's a two-stage approach. The first stage is just pulling everything in, don't think about it, just pull it all in. You know, if you like it, it counts. That's it, that's all you need to think about at that stage. And then you go back and you think, okay, but which ones are really me, which ones am I like, that's it, that nails it, I love it. So if you end up with 200 images, can you then go back through them and cut it down to 40? There's got to be a degree of conscious discrimination at some point about which ones, otherwise it's just too overwhelming, there's too much. So mm-hmm. which ones really matter to you, which ones are really the things that you think, that's the one. Mm-hmm. But I think it's difficult. It's much easier often to see in those other kind of external things, visual things or images, than it is to see in our own work. And I think the problem with your own work is, how do I find my style, is that we're so wrapped up in all the questions that arise when we make it, that sometimes it's very hard to see that in your own work. And one of the other questions that we've been discussing this week with somebody in one of my groups is, how do I know when to stop a painting and that I haven't just kind of reworked over the same thing? And actually, I've ended up doing two paintings where the first one was actually fine, because I'm not quite good enough yet at stopping and saying, that's where I want this painting to be. And I think that is as a result that we get so closely wrapped up in the process of executing it or creating something, that you have to somehow build in a degree of objectivity where you can stand back and look at it again. Try and look at your work as if you're an external person, another version of yourself perhaps. And that's the only way that you can start to identify what those threads are going to be for you.
Yeah, and another thing I did when I started to find my way with this is to look at the parts of my paintings that I did like. So I was quite disappointed at one stage with what I was creating, but there were parts that were like clues. Because if there was a part that I loved, that was a clue onto what was coming next. So there was one I can remember, which I think I've mentioned before, and it was a painting of a stone wall coming down a hill. And it was with a storm in the sky, and it was fairly representational. But by accident, in the bottom right-hand corner, I lost the wall and it kind of abstracted. But it looked amazing and it made the painting, because it changed from being just a basic representational painting to being something else. And I absolutely loved that painting, and I don't have it anymore. But I wish I'd taken a picture, and I didn't even take a picture. That little corner with the abstracted wall was a sign to me of the next way to go.
Yeah.
So what I started to do once I realized that is just say, yeah, I don't like this painting, but that corner where the paint's dripped or that corner where it mushed up, I really like that. And that bit I don't like. And I started to put those into a sketchbook and just keep track of. That helped me to narrow down, and it also helped me. My analytical part was to take, like, let's say your paintings, because I'd come across you online and I liked what you were doing, and yours were very different from Leslie's.
Do you remember which one of mine it was? Because we were talking a long time ago, and I think
I know which one of yours was my favorite. Yeah, it was called Canopy.
Oh yeah.
You can find it in Google Images, people, if you look.
That was one of the first big paintings I ever made.
That is just beautiful. But I remember taking that one and one of Leslie's that I loved, and they're very, very different. And then going, right, what are the common elements here? Mm. And that was a way that I got into it as well. So what are the things I'm loving in these two very different artists? Partly it was landscape without being landscape. Partly it was texture, different textures and things. So just, and I did that with all kinds of artists, and it really helped me to start getting a sense, instead of looking at someone's work and thinking, I want to do that, looking at their work and thinking, what is it about that that's appealing to me?
Okay. So I think we're getting somewhere on this, in that the notes, and when we spoke about this earlier in the week, you messaged me and you wrote down, you can't find your own way without a map. You can't find your voice or make unique, compelling art without understanding who you are and what you want to say. Personally, I find that really daunting. I would find that a really difficult starting point. Okay, then you've got a part. Then you've got
I didn't mean that as a starting point. I didn't mean that as you've just got your first watercolors right.
Yeah, what's your voice? Out. Make compelling art. What do you want to say?
No, I didn't mean it as a starting point.
I don't know what I want to say. All I want to do is escape from CBeebies for half an hour.
Yeah, I think what I mean is that's when you cross over into making work that other people find compelling and interesting.
Yeah. And I think it takes time to get there. And I think you said, you know, it was for you, it was this accidental almost part of this painting and this wall that kind of somehow visually disintegrated. So it wasn't quite so immediately obvious what it was. And the same way, I suppose it was the same way for me too, in the sense that, you know, I started with this idea, like I had to have a subject, and God knows, I was so exhausted. I mean, at that point, my brain wasn't working properly. I couldn't think of who I was or what I wanted to say. I'm just painting pictures of trees. Give me a break. But it was only in the process of doing that that I started to realize, actually, do you know what? The thing that I really love is when colors mix in this particular way, or I can draw through the softness of this paint with a pencil. I was working really small at that point, and I just loved that thing. So only discover it almost as a byproduct of what you're doing. I think that's the key. And then it's about those moments just when you notice that and recognize that. And a big part of this is giving up the idea that, or being able to kind of relinquish the idea that you've got to do everything. I mean, there was somebody in this group, and she posted 10 different pictures, all excellently executed, beautiful portraits, landscapes, color palette. I mean, it was all pencil drawings. They were all there, the whole thing available. But you've got to make a choice.
And that comes back to the question that we were asked. So when you can do all those things, and you can do them all well, and you enjoy them all, but you want, I mean, it's okay if you can do all those things well and you enjoy them all, and you're not concerned with building a brand for yourself or getting into galleries or any of that.
Yeah, good point.
And obviously it's totally fine to keep doing what you love, and especially if it's a hobby. But obviously this person asked the question, so they must feel like they need to narrow down. So how do you choose? I mean, I know you were pulled between two things at one point.
Yeah.
So that was two different mediums, wasn't it? Were there different styles within that as well?
No, and I think so this was between continuing with printmaking and coming back to painting, and I just felt that I couldn't do both adequately, so just for the moment I had to make a choice. But I think I just identified what it was in printmaking that I enjoyed that was something that was more process led. It was more to do with the materials leading the outcome and some element of unexpected in it. And I took that and I wanted to take that back into painting. At some point, I'd love to go back to printmaking. I don't feel like I've shut the door on it. It's just that practically speaking, I don't have an acid printmaking room at home. So hey ho, you know, that's a little bit harder to do on a regular basis. So sometimes that's what it comes down to as well. But I think you're right. If you're simply doing it for enjoyment, you can dot all over the place. You can do it, you know, totally as the whim takes you. I do that now by switching between large and small.
Mm.
Because I have a very different feeling when I'm painting large or painting small, and I enjoy both of those equally. And I don't feel that I have to choose between those. So maybe it's about narrowing down what you create in a way that still gives you variety, so that you still feel like you've got a sense of being able to respond to what you make on a day-to-day basis, or choose depending on how you feel, without feeling like you're cutting anything off. I think that's important.
Yeah, and I think choosing, I think if you say I'm making a choice now, I'm going to be an abstract painter and I'm going to drop everything else, that can feel really final and like you're losing something. But if you say to yourself, I'm going to drop everything else for 6 months or however long, and I'm going to just focus on abstract painting or whatever is the one out of those that you really feel the best when you're doing, because I always think the gauge is, what do you actually feel the best? When do you feel the most alive? When are you most in flow? When does the time slip by? If they all feel like that, then just randomly toss a coin and pick one. But if one of them feels, but then just say, right, I'm just going to give myself, if 6 months feels like too long, 3 months. I'm just going to do this for 3 months and focus and see what can happen. And, you know, like the creating the impossible we were talking about last week, he says, if you pick something and it doesn't feel like the right thing, toss it aside and pick the next thing. Don't make yourself stay with it if it just doesn't feel enjoyable. I think maybe that's the advice I would give. Just give something time to catch, something time to really grab you. And you can't possibly do them all as well as you could do one of them if you focused on just one.
Yeah, that's a very good point. That's a very good point.
On the other hand, it's one other thing, sorry, that just occurred to me, is I do know an artist who commercially makes, so she paints beautiful abstract paintings of ice. She's traveled to the Arctic Circle or whichever one has the ice anyway. She's traveled there several times. Both. Oh, okay. Well, geography was not my strong point at school, people. Anyway, she's gone there on boats and she's drawn, and then she's only ever been, I think, twice, but that's what she paints. However, that's not really commercially viable. So she shows in galleries and et cetera. But she also did some sketches of penguins while she was there, and those became really popular. So she has a line of paintings. I don't know if she still does this, Lisa, if you're listening, but she painted penguins and those she sold as prints, and those did really well.
Yeah.
And I remember her saying to me, I wish it was my ice paintings that sold as well as the penguins, but you know, it's the penguins and that pays for everything else. Yeah. So there's also that side of it. And it might be that you don't do the other thing commercially. It might be that you do it. I've gone back to sketching. And by that, I mean more like a daily journal, sketching something from my day. That's just a relief from, that's just a different thing from the painting. And it's a way of switching off from that. So you might have two things, but I think having 6 or 7 or 8 is just a bit too much.
It's a bit complicated, isn't it? I think that's the thing, is that I'm looking for ways to simplify. And actually, if there's something that gives me the option of editing out some of it so that I can focus more on what I really want to do, that's quite a good way of making decisions about it. I found this lovely quote, though, that I wanted to mention, which is, art and love are the same thing. It's the process of seeing yourself in things that are not you. Chuck Klosterman. I don't know who he is. Is he a writer?
He's American. I know that.
Kind of.
I don't know why I know that,
doesn't he? But it's a lovely thing, though, isn't it? But this idea, it's the process of seeing it yourself in things that are not you. And I think that was when art started to become really satisfying for me, when I started to get more of those moments where I recognized something in the act of painting and in the final result of the painting that was a kind of thrill for me, because perhaps it didn't exist anywhere else in my life.
Yeah.
You know, there was maybe a rawness, maybe an honesty to it. I don't know. I think maybe for me, painting came in at a point where I was feeling like I suddenly had to be very responsible all of a sudden, or perhaps I was struggling, you know, new mum, 2 small children on your own, husband working very hard. There was a lot of responsibility in my life at that point.
Yeah.
And I think when I really started to paint and push it, and this took time, I mean, we're talking a process of maybe 3 or 4 years, maybe over this point, to kind of move to this. But that's when it started to suddenly get really exciting, where I suddenly started to think, there is something new coming out in these paintings that is not just me being able to draw a tree or me being able to draw a life figure and get it done accurately. There is something in these paintings that couldn't exist if anybody else made them.
Yeah. And that thing, like you said, when you look at something you made and you see yourself, but maybe a part of yourself that you had not either recognized or let other people see before.
Yeah. And I think maybe a part that even surprises you, that you think, well, look at that then.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly. And I've told this story, I'm sure, but I did a small painting right at the beginning of this journey of finding my own way, that to me, I knew when I looked at it, that's me, but so different from anything I'd ever made before. And when I showed it to my best friend, he said, well, that's the you that I've known all along. I see you in that. And it was a really abstract and not a good painting, but it really wasn't a good painting, but I still kept it because it's the first time that I saw myself in a painting, as opposed to just seeing what it was that I'd looked at and then decided to paint a version of.
So are we also saying then that there's this two-stage thing here? So if you kind of set out with a big principles intention, like who am I and what I want to say, that's going to be too daunting. Like you can't do that. You've got to allow for the fact that this is a process and there is going to be a gap in the process. But also, I think the element of frustration when you feel you're not quite getting to what it is that you want to do, like, oh, I can't get it. I'm not. And you can get these breakthrough moments in your own work that just happen as a result of putting in the hours, I guess, doing it, showing up regularly. But also understanding how you create those kind of situations more often, perhaps. I mean, there is a degree of mastery, isn't there, that I think over your materials. And that's when you go back to your question of, like, if you've got 6 different things on the go, if you've got watercolor and acrylics and pencil drawings and charcoal, like, which one where do you want your mastery to be? What do you really want to excel at?
Yeah. And then pick one. And then I really think there isn't a shortcut to that. You just have to keep doing it then. So you've decided, let's say you decide acrylics. So then you have to do a lot of paintings with acrylics. And I was listening to an interview and I'll find the person's name and put it in the show notes, but it was on the newest episode of the Lorna Horn podcast.
Oh, yeah.
A really good podcast. And on the very newest episode, the artist she was interviewing, and while I'm telling you, Alice is looking up to see who it is, had a great phrase. She said that she tells beginning artists or people who are looking for their voice that the very first thing they have to do is lower their standards.
Yeah.
And I just thought, oh, I'm stealing that. Because she said, you just have to make bad art. So the artist was Dina Wakely, and the podcast is episode 76 of the Lorna Horn Art Podcast, and it's called Why It's Okay to Make Bad Art. And so her base, I just love that phrase, you have to lower your standards. While ever, and this is the biggest problem I find with the people who, some of the people who come and take my course, is they're stuck on the need to make a good painting every time they go in. And that need to make a good painting stops you from playing, experimenting, testing ideas out. And it sounds awful to say you have to keep making bad paintings. That sounds terrible.
Yeah, none of us want to make bad paintings.
But actually, it's not terrible, because what happens is, as soon as you let go of that need to impress anybody, and as soon as you just start experimenting, you get, like we were saying earlier, all those little moments of excitement and all those little thrills. So you might make two or three pieces that are not working, and all of a sudden you do something and you go, oh, I love that. You can't get to that by trying to very carefully paint a nice vase of flowers.
You can't, but also, much like we talked earlier about, like if you take the different ingredients of something and you put it back to, in and you mix it up and ba-dum, am I going to get a painting that's just like that? No, you're not. But, you know, like you're a chef, you know, if you're doing something as you go along, if you're creating something as you go along, taste, you know, you can check in with it, taste it as you go and know what you need to adjust. Like, do I want this to be spicier, hotter, sweeter, saltier? Does it need to have a little bit of contrast in it? The place that we stayed over the weekend, the food was fantastic. And it was so good because they just had in every single dish just this lovely balance of flavors between something that was soft, something that was crunchy, something that was slightly sweet or a little bit of sour or a little bit. There was, you know, everything that was in there was there that made it really satisfying. And I think we can learn how to do that in a painting, is just, you know, what is the bit of seasoning that it needs to make it feel satisfying, so that you're not kept for too long in this kind of perpetual trough, is the word that comes to mind, making bad painting. Because I agree with you, there is definitely a place for experimenting, without a doubt. It's fun and it takes you to new places. But you also want, you need to have, I think we need to have those moments of satisfaction. They're the bits that keep us going as well. So I think having some kind of guide that, so that you know that you're getting closer towards what it is that you want to be doing, that's the thing that's going to keep you making it. And in the long term, that's really going to help your art.
Yeah. Okay, so I've mentioned a couple of times the book idea. Yeah. And in line with Michael Neal's theory that you can toss out an idea if it doesn't make you grin,
it's gone, is it?
Or giggle. It's gone for now. It's not gone forever, because I know I want to do that, but I really don't want to do it now. I just don't have any drive to do that at all.
Yeah, you feel it then, don't you, I think?
Yeah. And the so I came up with another impossible thing that I wanted to do, but I think this is my problem, is so it's secret for the moment, so I can't say what it is, but I've already done it. So I had this idea. I knew it felt good. I thought, right, I'm just going to get that going. I'm not going to mess around. So it's now pretty much created. So now, it doesn't mean anybody has taken me up on the offer, so we'll see about that. But the thing itself is going to be born into the world in a few months.
If this is what I thought it was when you told me this is what you're creating the impossible was going to be, I thought to myself, that's not creating the impossible. You could do that tomorrow if you wanted. That is not an impossible thing.
Well, the reason why I picked it, though, is, okay, so you're right. Creating it isn't impossible, although there is a lot of work to it. But I am setting myself what feels like an impossible target for it.
Well, very goal driven.
Yes, I am. Because it's not worth doing if, yeah. Anyway, we'll talk about it when it's
okay.
When it's available.
Okay. Mine is still very vague, very loose. But what I've noticed in my 5 minutes of lovely, lovely 5 minutes of lying on the soft rug with my feet up on the sofa, I'm really enjoying lying on the floor and looking at the ceiling with my feet on the sofa.
That's not impossible either.
Oh, that's lovely. What I'm noticing is that all my creating the impossible things that are coming to me, even though they're non-specific at the moment, they are all painting related. They're mm-hmm. not businessy related. And it's still a bit amorphous, but it feels like it's been quite a quick, tight wrapping up of this work for Surrey Art Fair, but I am just feeling like, okay, this is kind of together now. I want to go into the next phase of whatever work is going to be. So I'm trying not to hurry it because I do quite enjoy that last finishing stage, but the creating the impossible is definitely to do with, okay, where's the work going to go next?
And so that's interesting.
It's totally non-goal related.
Yeah. But do you think, well, yeah, it's goal related in the sense of the work though. So does that mean that you'll start new work, do you think, with an intention? So it'll be different from working intuitively and then developing the intention as you go because you're going to have this impossible idea? Or is it more like impossible in terms of where you're going to show it? Or
yeah, maybe that. Maybe yeah. some kind of end result or location for it. But I'm not sure if I need to clarify that in advance. I just need to have the idea that hopefully this the next set of work is destined for different things, perhaps.
Exciting. Because that's the other thing is I toyed with, I'm working on these Ted Hughes paintings. And so, of course, it would be easy to come up with what would feel like an impossible goal for them too. But I've been also doing the laying down and so far nothing's come to mind on that. So we'll see.
Yeah, there we go. I don't think you can push it before it's ready. I think you just got to keep committing to the 5 minutes lying down and thinking about it. That should be easy enough. You can put it on the list along with teeth flossing and pelvic floor exercises and all the other things we're supposed to do 5 minutes each day. So following that then, what's inspired you this week?
Actually, what's inspired me this week, it's a bit of a negative inspiration, I suppose. It's what I don't want to do. I joined a small private Facebook group for people to discuss what they're grateful for. And I did this because I've tried before to do the gratitude journaling that people recommend to change the way you feel about things. Yeah. And I always drop it after about a week because just like a diet or something, you think, oh, I haven't got time. Oh, no, I'll just go back to normal. So I thought joining this group would make me a bit more accountable to have to actually show up and say something. And it's been quite interesting because I have recognized being more conscious of a lot of negative thought patterns and having to say something positive on a day that doesn't feel good.
Yeah.
Really makes you aware of, hang on a second. So,
because you don't want to be disingenuous either. It's not about forcing yourself into feeling. It's got to be about genuinely changing the way you feel.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, something that happened today was I woke up this morning. There was a lot of stress, a lot I had to do. My dog goes to daycare a couple of days a week, but not normally on a Thursday. But there's just so much going on and there's workmen here and he barks all day when they're here. And I thought, you know, I'm just going to take him into daycare because he'll have a good time there. He'll run around with the other dogs and everything else will go more smoothly. So I did that. And on the way back, I was just thinking about all these negative things. And then I just thought, this is such a small thing, but you know, I have a place where I can take my dog where they absolutely love him and where he's happy as a clam. In fact, I think sometimes he wishes he didn't have to come home. And these people will really take good care of him, and that's freed up my day to get all this stuff done. But I'm not focused on that. I'm focused on the bad stuff. And this bad stuff isn't even all that bad.
Yeah.
So it's just that kind. It's just recognizing, well, look what I'm doing again. And then pulling myself up from that. And I can choose, if I want to wallow in that all day. And then I'll feel really bad and make everyone else feel bad around me. Or I can just try and focus on the all the positive things. And there are so many. I mean, yeah, in both our lives, in
everyone.
I'm sure everybody listening to this, if we were born in the Western world in this time and place, and if somebody has the money for a device that they're listening to this on, then we won the life lottery.
Yeah. And I think the other thing that's interesting about something that happens in a group like that is that you'd say that it's sometimes difficult to stick to when it's you and a diary and you're writing it. What I find happens with that is I might have a couple of days where I don't do it, or I get out of sync or something, and then something will pop up and it will be somebody else's message. And that's the thing that gets me started again. It's somebody else's message. And then I think, oh, yeah. But it genuinely does kind of change things around. So, yeah.
Yeah, I'm enjoying good. It. So how about you?
Well, mine actually, I did think about that this morning when I woke up and I was exhausted because we'd had a very late night last night. So, and I spoke about this time last year when the podcast was in baby stages. So my son's school, they do a rock show, and it's once a year, and it was last night, and last year was really good. And last night was
Oh,
that's so sweet. My bit of tearful. I've already done this once this morning, but never mind. last night was exceptional. And of course, it's always fantastic, you know, to show up and see your children do things. And you know, that's why nativity plays are amazing when they're little. But what was so incredible about this was, and I spoke about it last year, I said that they have this amazing ability, or it looks an amazing ability, to just get up on stage and do what they do. And I'm sure that lots of them are, you know, anxious about it and they're worried about how it's going to get across. But what struck me yesterday was that this school and this teacher in particular has created, and he said the first one was 14 years ago and we really had to battle to get it to exist, and every year it's got better and better. The quality last night of what they were producing was jaw-dropping. It was just they came on and they did the first 35 minutes were kind of songs that moved into each other. They had all different genres. It was nonstop. It was just amazing. And I think to create that kind of space where you allow people to explore what they're naturally good at and give them the space to do it and to share it with others is astonishing.
Yeah, because I think that is something that bothers me about schools, and the little bit I know about our school system here is how much unusual kids are pushed into having to do the same as every other kid, and then they get lost in the system. My little friend who comes around here, he's totally lost in the system because he's not a normal kid, but he's got so many talents that don't get, anyway, that's my rant, but it's nice to see somewhere that's doing that. Can I ask what Theo was doing in the show?
Well, Theo plays electric guitar and bass guitar. So he was mainly electric guitar, but so he was on, I think he was on five tracks. It was a little bit difficult to to keep track of where he was. So different groups, different, but they don't have fixed bands as such, but the range of music, it ranged from country, to Jamiroquai, to this girl sang that intro to the Whitney Houston I Will Always Love You song and then changed it into something else. I have never heard anybody else carry that off in real life. It was amazing. There was jazzy stuff, and there's quite a lot of heavy rock stuff. You know, it's called the Rock Show after all as well. So the way that it was all put together as well, and the way they just kept the pace up, like they moved quickly from one thing into the next, and everybody knew what they were doing, and they just put so much time into it. And last night was the first night, and they've got two more shows, and I just think maybe when the first one's over and done, now they can really relax into it and enjoy it. But
yeah,
it was really truly inspiring. We better leave it there for this week then, hadn't we? Hopefully on a kind of happy note. Must be tired if I'm crying on a podcast.
that was a lovely note. Everybody listening is going, oh, Alice, and they all want to give you a big hug. But it's happy crying anyway. So
I don't know. It's just that thing where you see something and you know that, and you know what it was? It was the fact that I don't think they even realize. It'll be one of those things that they look back on in 5 years and think, holy smoke, what that school let us do was pretty amazing.
Yeah.
And they're just kind of like, yeah, this is kind of what we do at school. And it's like, you don't even realize how cool something is until later down the road. But
when they're in their 40s, they'll be sitting around talking about the glory days when they were in that rock band at school.
I tell you what, some of those people on that stage, I think we will hear about them in future. Yeah. It's pretty astonishing. So, okay, on that note, we're going to leave it for the end of episode 55. We were going to give you one last reminder. This is coming out on Tuesday, the 11th of February, in just a couple of days. It's the first of this year's Art to Life free workshop, and we would love you to join us. We've spoken a lot today, actually, about finding your own way of doing things, and just because it's important. And I think this is something that we've both mentioned has made a huge difference for us. Even if you only come and join the free lessons, do please come and join us. And if you want to join our pop-up group, do. So you can find the full information from that on both our websites, louisefletcherart.com or alicesheridan.com. If you just want to sign up for the free workshop itself, you go to bit.ly/art2life2020 bit.ly/art2life2020. And if you do it, we really hope, commit to it, watch the lessons, stay with it, work out how you can make that part of your life and your art making. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye. So now in a bag of Revels, you get Maltesers.
A poor imitation of Maltesers. Okay. Minstrels.
No, you don't get minstrels. You get little galaxy buttons. Like those. You get chocolate raisins. Yum.
Yeah.
Chocolate oranges. Yum. Mm. And then you get toffees
caramel.
In chocolate. Yeah,
the caramel ones are favorite. Okay. I don't mind the caramel. I'll forgive you the caramel ones, but I'd rather just have Revels. No.
When I was a child, when I was a child, we were so poor, we didn't have very many treats. I don't mean it like that, but we didn't have a lot of treaty treats. But when the FA Cup final was on, my dad would say, go down to the shop and get whatever you want and bring me back a chocolate bar or whatever. And we'd go and I'd get a family-sized bag of Revels and sit and eat them all by myself. That was my best treat I had as a child. So maybe that's why I still like them. Can we not speak anymore?
I just like Revels, such a bad choice in chocolate, you know, totally lost all respect.